This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Every year, at least 100,000 children around the world are recruited into a life of forced sex. In Maryland, the average age of entry into prostitution is 12, and thousands of young people are at risk of becoming involved in the sex trade. The state is hoping to change that by developing a more systematic approach to how it recognizes victims of sex trafficking. One part of doing that was to create the Maryland Human Trafficking Task Force, comprising federal, state, and local law enforcement, as well as people who work to provide services to victims. In November, I spoke with two members of the task force, U.S. Attorney Rod Rosenstein, whose office coordinates the task force, and Amelia Rubenstein, the team leader of the anti-trafficking program at the nonprofit Turnaround, which works with survivors of gender-based violence. I started by asking Rod Rosenstein whether the word trafficking actually implies movement.
Some people have in mind movement of illegal immigrants in particular, or slavery. But one of the challenges we face is that we have children, American children, who are coerced into prostitution as young as age 12 or 13. And that's one of the things that we're focused most on here in Maryland.
And by definition, is this a commercial transaction? Does somebody have to be making money off this for it to be illegal?
Well, it's illegal for anyone to engage in sex with a child, but we've particularly focused our law enforcement resources, and especially our federal law enforcement resources, on commercial trafficking, that is, children who are sold for sex.
Amelia, you work with domestic victims of sex trafficking. Describe to us who these people are. I mean, how did they find themselves in this situation?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great question, because I think very often we say, you know, how does this happen? So the most of the vulnerabilities that we see are involvement in child welfare. So youth that came out of the foster care system that had early childhood sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, parents with a severe substance abuse issue. And those kids are kind of ripe emotionally, and sometimes also in terms of basic needs for homeless and runaway youth. These are the kids that are most easily targeted by pimps and traffickers to be taken advantage of.
When you say ripe emotionally, what do you mean?
So children with low self-esteem or who have had adults in their lives that have crossed boundaries with them, who aren't able to distinguish kind of dangerous people from safe, healthy people. Yes, absolutely. So these are the kids that are easily targeted by traffickers, because traffickers are looking for people with not a lot of family support, kids that may not have a home to go back to. These are kids who they can more easily take advantage of.
How do they do it?
So we see that a lot of traffickers kind of approach young girls as a boyfriend figure, so kind of courting them in a grooming process that involves, you know, spending a lot of money on them, listening to kind of their troubles, if there's family problems at home, earning trust until they've gotten to a point where they will either demand or ask that child begin to engage in commercial sex acts.
Rod Rosenstein, you have been U.S. attorney since 2005. The task force, as I recall, was set up in 2007, right, and has been sort of growing since then in terms of the different expertise involved. What should we understand about how juvenile victims of trafficking are treated now compared to, say, 10 years ago?
Well, that's really one of the challenges that we wanted to address by forming the task force, because traditionally, if the local police department came across a prostitution situation where there was an underage prostitute, that prostitute would be treated as a criminal, right, because prostitution is a crime. And one of the things we've tried to overcome is that mindset, where we need our police officers instead to treat the juvenile prostitutes as victims for two reasons. First of all, they are victims. They've usually been coerced. They lack adequate homes to go back to, and they need support. And secondly, in order to successfully prosecute the case, you need to have that prostitute available to cooperate with the government in the prosecution. And so part of our effort has been to educate the police. Part has been to reach out to organizations that are in position to provide services for victims that can help them in ways that police and prosecutors can't, help them to get settled, help them to get educated, make sure they get they have a place to stay and food to eat, and therefore help those kids put their lives back together, and also make sure they're going to be available when we need them to testify in court.
Well, what would you say to someone who says, okay, I get that Amelia Rubenstein should be worried about these kids putting their lives together, but
You're a prosecutor. You're supposed to be focusing on the law and bad guys breaking the law.
Right.
Why is that this your problem? If you've said that these are victims, not criminals, why is it your problem to deal with them?
Well, our problem is to stop the trafficking. And so our target is the perpetrators, the pimps who are actually trafficking these children. And they're our primary target. And we've had great success in prosecuting them. And in federal court, we've reached significant results. We've gotten sentences in the range of 10, 20, 30 years or more on some of these child traffickers because they're abusing children, because they're having sex with children, and because they're trafficking them for money. And so from a law enforcement perspective, we think we've been very effective in targeting these federal resources at the most egregious cases and also in working in tandem with our state and local prosecutors. The majority of these cases are still going to be prosecuted in local courts, and so we need to make sure to coordinate our efforts to provide them support that they need and then to make sure that when there are cases where it would be appropriate to bring in the heavy penalties of the federal system that we're in position to do that.
That's U.S. Attorney for Maryland Rod Rosenstein here on Maryland Morning on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Amelia Rubenstein, team leader of the anti-trafficking program at the group Turnaround, which works with survivors of gender-based violence. They're both part of the Maryland Human Trafficking Task Force. Amelia, what is still needed in terms of victims' services in Maryland?
So I think we're seeing a big lack in services for transgendered victims as well as male victims. I think primarily there's been such a focus on girls, but we do know that there are transgendered youth who are exploited and trafficked as well as boys. I think we need to build capacity in terms of services. So there's some areas that are really well covered in terms of victim care. So Baltimore has a lot of the providers, the specialized anti-trafficking providers in Baltimore, and then there's some in D.C., but there's whole parts of Maryland where there aren't any specialized services for trafficking survivors.
And you have to give me a better idea of what you mean by services.
Services. Services is something we throw around a lot. So I kind of take it in a step-by-step process. So there's emergency services and crisis response, which literally means on the scene of, you know, the law enforcement is doing a recovery and they have a victim and they're starting their investigation of a case. But then you have a victim who may need meals. She needs a safe place to go to sleep. So we provide emergency shelter. We provide, you know, basic needs like clothing, food, make sure she gets settled safely into an emergency shelter, making sure they have medical needs met because very often these girls are not getting any medical care. And then from there, we progress into intensive case management, which means making sure they can get their documents back. Very often, girls come to us with no ID, no birth certificate, no social security card, and it's very hard to establish, you know, housing applications and those kind of things without those really vital documents. And then, of course, like engaging them in therapy to deal with trauma that results from being trafficked, and then establishing longer-term goals about housing and education and employment.
I read that there are a lot more services in the city than in the region around Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Does that create problems for you? Is the problem mostly in the city? So that's, of course, where the resources are?
I mean, we see in this area, we see a lot of trafficking in Baltimore City and Baltimore County, and then there's two locations in Anne Arundel County that are kind of hot spots for trafficking. So you have Laurel, and then you have BWI Airport area. And so there's not a trafficking-specific organization in Anne Arundel County, so we kind of extended our reach, and I know that other providers will do that as well. But those are some major areas just right around here.
Rod Rosenstein, what are some of the challenges in prosecuting these kinds of cases?
The primary challenge that we face is to gain the trust and cooperation of the victims, of the prostitutes themselves. In some cases, you'll have a juvenile who has had a difficult childhood and may be disinclined to cooperate, and so we need to work with that victim in order to gain her trust and ensure that she's going to be available to testify. In some cases, we have aliens, people without proper documentation to be in the United States, and they're often reluctant to cooperate and distrustful of law enforcement as well. So the greatest challenge there really is gaining the trust of the child, and if we're able to do that, typically we're going to have sufficient evidence to go into court and prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the perpetrator is guilty.
WBAL did a series about this the problem of sex trafficking. One of the points they made was how important it is to teach investigators the right questions to ask. How do you do that?
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's really a process of, number one, teaching them they need to gain the trust of the victim by treating them as a victim and assuring them that you know, the law enforcement authorities are there to help them and not hurt them. They think they're going to be in trouble. You know, they're afraid that they're going to go to jail. They're going to be reported back to their parents. You know, they don't know what's going to happen to them. And so we need to approach them in a different way as victims. We need to assure them that we're going to get them services. Now, there are cases where the victims may be unwilling to talk initially, and we'll refer them to an organization such as Turnaround, which will provide them services and come back later when they're more comfortable and maybe more willing to talk. So it's a lengthy process. It's going to take patience, and it's going to take effort, continuing effort, really, to work with the victim over time.
But I guess in part I'm really asking is what I'm hearing from you what I would hear from all police officers, all law enforcement, or are you kind of unusual in saying these are victims, not criminals?
No, I think you'll hear it from all law enforcement officers. And, you know, that one of our goals has been throughout the state to make sure that officers are trained and understand the program and know who to call when they have child victims of prostitution. So I think we've been very successful in that effort. You know, we've had tremendous support from throughout the state of Maryland. At the annual seminars that we've held, we've had the number of cabinet members and the governor of Maryland participating and providing the commitment from the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Human Resources, Governor's Office of Crime Control and Prevention, the Department of Juvenile Services. So, you know, throughout all relevant government agencies, as well as police and prosecutors, I think we now have everybody working in a coordinated way to make sure these cases get the proper attention.
Amelia, your focus is mainly on helping victims after they've been trafficked. What sort of changes in society would you like to see to keep these people from becoming victims in the first place?
Well, I think if we want to do prevention, then one, we have to start putting this on the table as an issue. So I spend some time in juvenile detention centers talking to kids about, you know, what does a pimp look like and what is a healthy relationship, and kind of really throwing this issue out. Because we talk to kids about domestic violence or safe sex or these kind of things, but we're not talking about pimping and trafficking. And so I think it's important to start that conversation with them.
The ABLE Foundation issued a report early this year on sex trafficking in Maryland, stating that it's growing faster than authorities can control. I wanted to ask you, U.S. Attorney Rosenstein, do you agree with that?
I think that it probably is growing. You know, it's so tough to quantify because it's one of those crimes where the victims often don't report it. And so we only find it when we're actually out there proactively looking for it. But I think that one of the things that contributes to it is the existence of the Internet, the impact that that's had on the culture of children. You know, sometimes adults don't recognize just what impact the Internet has had on kids, where it has an effect of breaking down their boundaries, of introducing them to things that 20 years ago they just wouldn't see before they grew up, and ideas they wouldn't know about, and also puts them in contact with people, with strangers who are out to do them harm. So I think the impact of the Internet is underappreciated in terms of the impact it has on making children vulnerable to trafficking and other crimes.
Do you think the problem's getting bigger?
Yeah, and I think we're also identifying it more. So we have, you know, I used to be a foster care social worker, and I think, you know, 6 years ago we would have youth involved in prostitution, and we would kind of be like, oh, what should we do about that? And never ask the right questions to say, who got her involved? Does she have a pimp? Is somebody controlling her? So I think these kids are already being seen in all these different systems. They're showing up in hospitals. They're already in Department of Juvenile Services. They're in foster care. It's just that nobody's asking the right questions. And as we train people and they know what to look for, they're identifying more and more every week. We get multiple referrals a week from this area.
The series that WBAL did, one of their episodes focused on essentially, one might call it a raid, but it was like a good guy raid. It was police officers going to hotels where young women were being forced to traffic and basically offering them a way out. On that evening, None of those young women, I think there were like a half dozen involved, chose to leave. Amelia, what I want to ask is, mm-hmm. at that point, and these the ages given were, you know, late teen, early 20s,
mm-hmm.
past 18.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I would consider them victims before that, if they've been offered a way out and chose to stay, are they really victims?
Hmm. And then I think it comes back to, you know, the question of choice. You know, what are your options? You know what I mean? And maybe there is someone that they feel like would come find them. And I think the threat of violence is really, really frightening for these victims. And there's also this, you know, trauma bonding component where people are psychologically tied to these perpetrators in a way that can be very difficult to understand and can be very hard for even service providers to deal with. It's kind of similar to Stockholm Syndrome in the way that they would bond and be loyal to someone who's very violent, actually, and is victimizing them. But most of our girls say, you know, of course, we could have walked out, but where would we have gone? And he would have just come found me. He's always going to find me. He's always going to know where I am. So that kind of, they're not being held captive, obviously, but the psychological bonds are extremely important to consider. And I think what's interesting about that night and that raid, and I know the team that was out there doing that, and they hand out cards and they offer services. And sometimes the girls will call 2 or 3 weeks later, and it's not until maybe a gun is held to their head or they really feel like I'm going to die if I don't leave. And it's then that they can reach out for help. And so what we keep encouraging law enforcement is please plant that seed that there are people out there who can help. And you never know when that person's going to take advantage of that.
You've talked about how often these are young people who have been let down by their own families. But can either of you tell me if there are any signs that people who might be around these young people, say teachers or who might see them in some other setting, what to be alert for?
So, yeah, what I always tell people who are working with young people is to be looking at runaway histories. So if you have a child that is a chronic runaway and she's gone for long periods of time, we need to be asking the question, where were you going? Who was paying for your travel? How are you taking care of yourself? If she's traveling to lots of different states or faraway places, I mean, when I talk with a youth who's had a runaway history of 9 months gone and she was in Miami and then Alabama and then Atlantic City, those are huge red flags to me. I always look at tattoos. Very often, pimps will brand their girls with a tattoo or a logo with their initials, or sometimes I've even seen barcodes be used. So I'm always asking kids about their tattoos. Tell me about that tattoo. What does it mean to you? And then also the presence of an older boyfriend and kind of monitoring that dynamic. And is that person making inappropriate promises, like, you know, we're going to drive cross country or we're going to move this place? And also monitoring language. So there's a whole kind of subculture around prostitution that has its very own specific language. And so in trainings, I'll go over what that is and people should be on the lookout for that.
Amelia Rubenstein is the team leader of the anti-trafficking program at the nonprofit group Turnaround, which works with survivors of gender-based violence. Rod Rosenstein is the U.S. attorney for the District of Maryland. They're both part of the Maryland Human Trafficking Task Force. I talked with them in November. Meanwhile, a new report from the Urban Institute examines the underground sex economy in 8 major U.S. cities, including Washington, D.C. We have a link to it on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead, how jazz in Shanghai influenced the American music scene. Stay with us on 88.1.